Defendo Radio is on now.
Welcome to Infendo Radio. This is episode 278. I'm your host, Lewis Pugh, and joining me this evening, we have Scott Pratt.
Hi, how's everybody doing?
And we have Harrison Mofeld.
Howdy, everybody.
Okay, on today's show, we first have a feature, which is a review of Luigi's Mansion 2. Following that, we cover the Nintendo news. And finally, we end on a piece celebrating the 30th anniversary of the Famicom. Kickstarting with our Luigi Mansion 2 review. Luigi's Mansion 2, also as it's called in America, Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, is the sequel to the launch title on the GameCube, obviously named Luigi's Mansion. The game has made its transition from a home console game to a portable game. It was handled by the Canadian-based Next Level Games, who made the Wii version of Punch-Out and Mario Strikers.
Next Level a first or second party subsidiary of like Nintendo right now, or are they still kind of just out in limbo right now doing independent work?
They are third party, I believe. They're still doing non-Nintendo works.
I'm just thinking from the work right now, I'm like, you know, if you're wanting to gobble up these different development teams, I mean, I feel like that's one that Nintendo should kind of keep their eye on. I mean, and this is evident by what we'll be discussing with, you know, shortly with, like, Luigi's Mansion's Dark Moon, which, yes, I know to everybody listening right now, this game came out back in March right now, but, you know, we just can't get enough of this.
Yeah, it's strange how we haven't heard any news about whether an entire purchase of the studio or taking some sort of stake in there, considering the Luigi Mansion is a fairly substantial IP with having Luigi in the title.
Oh, yeah, and, you know, and I haven't not heard, probably, I mean, the last I heard of a development studio being, you know, bought by Nintendo that I can first, like, remember was maybe... Well, not first remember, but just remember, like, the last time, maybe it was a couple years ago. I believe it was a couple years ago when they purchased 100% stake in Monolith Soft.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was that. I think that was well. And at that time, that kind of shook me by surprise. I mean, I was probably the only one out of my group of friends who followed the industry, or I was excited about that. And they're like, they just made Xenosaga. I'm like, yeah, but they finally have somebody who can make RPGs.
Yeah.
But I digress.
Yeah, without that purchase... We would be missing such a great game as Disaster Dev Crisis.
So, is it wrong that I was kind of excited for that game when I saw the Wii tech demo reel, whatever, and I was thinking, like, yeah, I could like this a little bit, whatever, and I was probably the only one, you know, during conferences on online boards saying, like, what happened to Disaster Day after Day of Crisis? And I just get blank looks or blank smileys and everything on me. I'm like, it was just a question.
To be fair, in the concept stages, I thought it looked like a quite a good game too.
But Luigi's Mansion.
How you derail a review? So, Next Level Games taking over the Luigi's Mansion franchise from the home console to the portable. The main way they've done this is to, instead of having a long or a large open world adventure type setup for the game, they've divided the game up into separate chapters. To add some variety into the game, you're not restricted to the one mansion. There are now, spoiler alert, several mansions dotted around the map, which you jump from one location to another as you progress through the game.
Shouldn't it be appropriate that this title of this game should have been called, instead of Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon, it should have just went the Alien to Aliens route by just calling it Luigi's Mansions?
That would make perfect sense. It would also kind of solve this ridiculous issue we have of the different naming conventions we have. Because obviously the Japanese name was Luigi's Mansion 2, which Europe normally sticks to what Japanese do. But I believe the reason why America didn't want to call it 2 was it may stop people from buying it if they didn't play the first one, because the DS had such a big audience, much more bigger than the GameCube. But if they just call it Luigi's Mansions, no issues whatsoever.
James Cameron's Luigi's Mansions, who knows, that could work. I don't know, maybe he'd pick up the action sequences is probably a little bit better. But I don't know, but you finished it right. You seem to enjoyed it thoroughly.
Oh, I definitely did. I mean, I really liked the first game, but the main problem, it was very short. If memory serves me right, you could complete it with under 5 hours or so, or around about that sort of time.
Yeah, I do remember that game. Like, that was one of two GameCube launch titles that I remember being relatively short, the other being the first Pikmin. But that was mostly blamed on the fact that you had a what was it, a 30-day time trial on there. Not actual 30 days, but the 30-day time, like, for each day intervals, like, went by so quickly. But, yeah. But, no, I've completed the... It's been a month since I finished Luigi's Mansion 2, or Dark Moon. Wow, I'm going to get confused with this right now. I got this probably when I first got my DS, whatever, back in the back in April on a part of the DS XL, or no, 3DS XL, and the, what was it, the deal that you'd buy it, get Luigi's Mansion, or what was it, Pokemon Mystery Dungeon, and get a free title. That was the only thing that enticed me to get that. And, you know, you think I'd go to Mario 3D Land the first title I'd buy, but, you know, I went straight through Luigi's Mansion, and one thing that kind of enticed me in Luigi's Mansion's Dark Moon, whatever, is just how easy you could be able to control the title. Not only that, it didn't do as much to, like, copy what, you know, do more of the same as what we saw with the first Luigi's Mansion. I mean, took it into a slightly different direction as far as not making it open world, but making it level-based. I mean, is that something that, would you say, probably enticed you to like it more, Lewis?
You know, when I first started the game, I thought it was going to be a disadvantage, the fact that they were split up into separate levels, and I didn't think it would have the same kind of adventure-y feel to it. But, yeah... As I made my way through the game, it really suits the portable play, and not only that, it's cool how they've done it with the different interactions of EGAD. When you go back inside the hub before you start each mission, they do have a little they do talk before and after each mission, so it doesn't feel so much like you're just selecting levels from a menu and jumping into these disconnected non-story levels.
I found myself kind of like when you're doing, like, going through talking with EGAD, I kind of found myself just pressing A. I get what's going on right now. I mean, I'm enjoying the game, but I get what the story is, so bam. But, I didn't use the 3D much in this title at all. I mean, there were moments where I'd see things that I know would probably see the effect of it, but when I did, I mean, it was well used as far as, like, when it came to how things would be popping up and how much immersed in there. But one boss battle in particular really made it look very well. It was the mansion that was covered in ice, and the boss battle where you were basically on a little sled with a cannon on it. That, I had it on there, whatever. But, yes. I mean, that was probably... I mean, that's one thing that drew me in a lot better on there. It was just... these boss battles on here. I mean, some of these, well, not as hard as I could say, but, I mean, they at least had a little bit of creativity.
Yeah, there's quite a nice variety of the different bosses. Unfortunately, the actual standard ghosts, as it were, there are only about 5 different types, although they do come in
that,
different variations
of
them.
There wasn't, like, a lot of variation in the ghosts. I mean, whereas when you saw in the GameCube version, there's quite a variety in there in the design, but I guess that's just given how what next level games had, whatever, in development with the power of the 3DS. I guess they couldn't just map anything really easily on there.
I'm not sure that was the issue, because although they use the same ghost lots of times, like the green ghost comes up so many times, but he comes in like an armored version, and sometimes you'll have like different items, but that completely kind of changes how we have to combat him. So if they just made those different variants look like different ghosts, I think that might defeat that problem a little bit.
And surprisingly, this one actually was a little bit longer to play. I mean, I think it took me about maybe 10 hours to beat.
Well, what I did before I started this recording, I actually went into my 3DS, went into that quite handy, play log, so you can see how many hours you spent in the game. I'm trying to think of if anyone else has played this game beyond me on a different file, because obviously that would affect this. But apparently my final playtime, and it would also include multiplayer, which I've dabbled in, is 21 hours, which is very impressive.
For a 3DS title, to be exactly, wow.
Yeah. And although I haven't kind of jumped back into the single player since I've beat it, but there are a few things which could tempt me back in there if I'm having a gaming lull, as it were. Because you do unlock an extra mission per mansion, which I never actually played through. And you do have the incentive of getting... there's a boo in each level, and there's the different... I'm not sure I'd go so far, but there are different treasures you can get in each mansion, at least.
Which I found a lot of time on there, just kind of just gobbling up, like, going through every nook and cranny, trying to find, you know, cash if possible. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of these levels where you follow the pattern, whatever. It's like, okay, you know, shine your light, or whatever his name, the attachment on there that you could use to three toads in there. Anyway, it's a light that's used as, like, it's almost like a... What am I thinking of right now? Wow, I'm having a brain fart right now trying to think of the name of the light. But anyway, you have, like, these tubular attachments to the Poltergeist 4000 or 3... Now I can't even figure out the name of this right now. That's all I need to play back on there. But, it's, what is it? But, anyway, I mean, there's the difficulty at each level. You're just kind of going, like, okay, search for cash, search every nook and cranny of your flashlight, find ghosts, do it, repeat. But, luckily enough, there's a lot of different detractment from each of these, whatever, be it, like, you know, you have to find keys, or you have to use the environment, whatever, to find, you know, to get to a certain area. But, I mean, luckily enough, it didn't become where it's like, okay, everything's bad, you know, but this formula wasn't getting tired and true. And that, during combat, I enjoyed the fact that it's like, okay, you're sucking up these ghosts. Once you have a couple of these ghosts in your, you know, in your grasp, whatever, I mean, those that are still surrounded by you, whatever, I mean, you have to worry about the fact that, like, oh, they're going to hit you and you're going to lose control of that. And there were many times in there where it kind of got a little bit frustrating.
Did you ever get a chance to check out the multiplayer in the game?
I have not since I've beaten the game right now. That is one thing I really do need to check on there, and you are one that constantly bugs me about it, and I know I need to get on it, but how is that exactly?
Well, it's surprisingly fully featured. You can play the entire of the multiplayer mode either on a single cart local play or online. And there is several different modes, and I think the main mode is I can't remember what the actual name of it is, but you tackle this giant tower, and you go by floor in increasingly difficult automatically generated floors, and they have different set puzzles and different ghosts, and basically you just have to clear the entire floor of all the ghosts. And the trick can be, because you have different parts of the floor locked off in your typical sort of way of locked doors, you need to, one, make your way through the floor in before the time limit runs out, and obviously find all the ghosts and capture them all. And this increases in difficulty each time you unlock a new floor. But the good thing about it is, because it is automatically generated, it has a lot of replay value, because what I've noticed in a lot of Nintendo multiplayer games, they're quite strict in the amount of different stages they'll let you play. So the fact it is generated means you can, if you do like Luigi's Mansion that much, you can keep going back to it, and you won't play the same tower
more than once. That's fairly well. I mean, that's one thing I heard from a few reviews, whatever, how the replayability, whatever, just kind of keeps you coming back for more. But, and not only that, it just... It seems like a really fun little romp to actually have and enjoy on there. I mean, just... I really need to get onto that, whatever. I mean, back to the bat... Well, one thing I wanted to mention that really frustrated me in the game was... Near the end of the title... And I think it's the last mansion when you're near the gate. And you have to go from different room to room, you know, eliminating ghosts before there's a certain set timer. Yes.
So I think this is like the second to last mission, actually.
Yeah... There has not been a moment in that game where I just really wanted to throw my 3DS down. Seriously, I mean, I had to switch up probably areas where I knew, which, because you're facing basically all the different forms of the ghosts in, like, I believe, 8 different rooms. And there's quite a few in there that I really would not care to actually, when there's a time limit, I don't want to be dealing with them when it gives, given how, like, a few of them, it takes me about, I don't know, maybe a minute or so, or no. 3 minutes or so just to get them out without losing any health, which I have to deal with that. And here's the thing, once you die, obviously, you go back to the beginning of the level. There's no checkpoint system, which that's one thing I can take away from whatever that got really annoying, because I could be near the end of a boss fight where, you know, traversing, you know, getting all this cash, getting a boo or something like that, and then it's like, oh, you're dead, and you don't have a... Well, I guess, what is it, your extra life in here is a dog bone from one of these ghosts, this ghost dog that Luigi encounters, and, you know, that gives you an extra life. But, of course, even if I don't have that, it just becomes frustrating at the end where I'm just like, God, I gotta go through this again. But back to that battle, it's I must have tried at least 10 different times just going through it right now, because, you know, you're jumping through portals, going through doors. Oh, I forgot this room to actually get this, like, you know, ghost in as well. And it's a matter of, like, you have to get these right ghosts where, like, shine your light on them in hopes of getting, like, wrangling in about, like, 4 or 5 of them at one pull. And, yeah, that was the one thing, moment in Luigi's Mansion Dark Mood that I really did not like. Obviously the praise of this game right now, I mean, the graphics and visuals, well, graphics and sounds of the game, and especially the 3D, what was it that you did not like about it, Lewis?
Well, I think you touched upon it there. I did find some of the missions to be quite tricky, and as you said, there is no sort of checkpoint system throughout the missions, and for most of them that's fine, because they're fairly short, but some seem to kind of outstay their welcome, and if you do die at the end of the mission, because some missions seem to be particularly tricky at the end, then you have to start the whole thing over again. And although most missions you will probably pass through fine first time, if there's a mission which you stumble upon the same bit at the end a couple of times, it really almost puts you off, you know, really pushing through that game, because you just know you're going to need to play another quarter of an hour to get back to where you were. One, if you don't think you're going to have issue with that, or two, if you think you can just push past that when that comes up. Overall, this is an absolutely terrific portable game. Actually, taking it a step further, even if it wasn't a portable game, upscaling graphics aside, this is definitely a worthy sequel to the original game, even if this was on the Wii U.
I know, I totally agree. I mean, coming into this game, I had my doubts probably buying it, whatever, you know, as long as its development was. I mean, well, it was announced like in 2011, so we've waited almost close to 2 years for this title. And, you know, I had my doubts because, you know, it was from a title of a game that was really not well-received as much. I mean, it was just a quirky little side story in the Mario universe. And, you know, I enjoyed it, but obviously from its, like, short and the fact that it wasn't really a right game to launch a new console with, like with for the GameCube. But with Dark Moon, I mean, it just further cements as far as these really good titles that the 3DS is pumping out. Yes, it's just mainly first-party titles right now, but it really kind of it just reaffirms that this really, I really do believe the 3DS is the must-have system right for at this moment.
I definitely agree. And just one final point I kind of want to make into this game before we jump into the Nintendo news is, you may be cautious the fact that it's such a longer game than the original, that it would get very, very repetitive. But next level games do put in some very unique gameplay mechanics, which you wouldn't necessarily be expecting, and they do freshen up gameplay. If you haven't yet picked this game up, I would heavily recommend it. It's a great game to either play on the go or just at home with your 3DS.
I couldn't. I know everybody's wanting a bit of a conflict on this title right now, but I really did enjoy the hell out of this game, and this review is a bit a little late and got it for the site, but you have a score for this game?
If I had to put a score in here, I would give it an 8 out of 10.
I'd be willing to put it around like a 7 or 7.5 for me. I mean, there's just everything was in place for the title, especially how much fun it was, but I felt like it could have taken a little bit more step further, but compared to the original, definitely a step above.
Okay. And that takes us on to the Nintendo news. From the most recent, coming out today, we had confirmation of the Wii U title, currently in Japan, Pokemon Rumble U. It's making its way over to America and Europe. And alongside it, it's bringing with it its NFC collectible figures. The game's going to be coming out on the Wii U eShop in Europe on August the 15th, and in North America on August the 23rd. In America, the NFC figures, which we'll go into a little bit more detail in a minute, will be sold exclusively at GameStops for $4 each.
So we're one step closer to the So basically, Pokemon plus the Skylander success equals, what's a better word for selling, like a term for selling like gamebusters?
I think that fits perfectly here. we're talking about a game. Why not use gamebusters? Yeah. Well, you know, one thing that, you know, I have to wonder though, the figures being sold exclusively at GameStop, is that going to be for the initial launch of the figures, or will that also be for future launches of figures? I haven't heard either way on that one, but I think it might be the initial launch.
That's what I got from the first little bit of news that was heard today, whatever, when they announced like everything totally on there. But I think it might be initial launch, because just keeping it to one little retailer like that just seems like financial suicide.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I mean when you get them in like a Walmart or you know a Toys R Us or you know any big stores like that, I think that they're just going to. I mean, people will buy them just because they're Pokemon figures, even if they don't have you know a Wii U. However, they're not going to make that special trip into a GameStop to do so. But still, I mean, $4 each figure, that's really not a bad price at all. I mean, I've bought figurines, you know, similar for my kids that, you know, don't have the NFC features in them, of course. And you know, they're twice that price. So I like that they're keeping the price pretty low.
So have you guys actually heard anything about the game itself from its Japanese launch?
I've been kind of low-key, or I've been just, like, under the loop, whatever, on this one, to be exactly. I mean, I knew of it in name only, and that the fact that, like, they're trying to, you know, jumpstart the whole NFC connection that they have with the gamepad. So I'm just as under the radar as far as this one as right now. I mean, call me a bad Nintendo fan, but just this one, I know it appeals to a certain audience. That audience wasn't just me.
Yeah. From what I hear, the actual game itself isn't actually that great. It seems it's the weakest in the Pokemon Rumble series. I'm not sure if it was someone's opinion of the game who's not using figures or is using figures or how that comes into the equation. Apparently it's very repetitive in the fact that it only uses the arenas which were brought in on the 3DS version of the game, I believe, whereas the Wii edition had actual kind of stages you would run through and battle enemies on the way. This is purely arena-based combat.
Well, you know, I think with the Wii U, the great thing about this is that, you know, it gets us used to using NFC on the controller itself, and remembering that the Wii U has the ability to update the game via various you know updates over the online connectivity. So, you know, if it does well, if here in the States or Europe or basically anywhere, we could see it expanded in the future. At least I hope we do. I haven't heard a whole lot about the game itself either, review wise or anything, but. I have to believe Nintendo has some faith to bring it over this way, even if just for the NFC functionality on it. But I'm thinking we might see some sort of enhancements to it later on.
I like how these are priced at $4. I mean, it gives me the thought, I'm like, can I just buy the figurines? I mean, I may not be picking up the game. I'm just probably just going to buy the figurines just for a little set top, but like just for little desk ornaments or something like that.
And how many figurines do you have to buy to equal the price of the actual eShop game? So that's probably not going to be too expensive.
This is only going to be exclusive on the eShop, not a retail?
I believe so. I believe it is an eShop game, opposed to a disc release.
I sure heard that also.
So I guess it's actually good promotion for the eShop. Just the figurines being out in the source.
It is. You know, and the figurines themselves, you know, like you said, with Pokemon X and Y coming out, that would be a perfect opportunity for some non-traditional DLC, you know, buy some of the new Pokemon from the collection, from X and Y, for the NFC characters, and then, you know, get a special download code or whatnot that interacts with the game to bring them into the game. Whether or not they do it, but that's the perfect way to introduce it, I think.
Yeah, and the other thing they can do, obviously, they could also always make a sequel to Pokemon Rumble U, which uses the same toys, and as well as the current toys which will come out, they can use the future X and Y generation, and they can build it up like that.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah, I mean it's no sense to whatever just like this title just kind of just flops on its head. I mean that you could still keep the toys out there for future reference. Or future use, to be exact. Speaking of Pokemon news, exactly, I got this news from like the Pokemon, the Pokemon Company website, and through Twitter, saying that this is still up till the 24th, but the Pokemon official Pokemon Pokedex is on the iOS right now. It's like for free right now, and I this literally, as soon as I heard that news, I just jumped directly on it and downloaded it while I was still at work. And I was disappointed that Generation 1 or 2 Pokemon were not on there. The other generation of the Pokemon... Yeah, the other generation of the Pokemon you have to buy. So that was the catch to it.
Well, once they get you hooked, though, I mean, 1 and 2 are almost essential for it. So I can see a lot of people spending the extra money.
Still my favorite generations there, 1 and 2, even though 1 still near dear to my heart. I mean, I always say that those original 151, I mean, more Pokemon's fine for me, whatever, to expand the series, but always those original 151 will always be classics to me.
Yeah, I'd be happy if they just made the whatever the next game is. Obviously, we know what X and Y is. If they just did a game with the 151, then just said, sod the rest of the series. We're sticking with the 151 for this one.
Yeah, they just weren't marketably viable right now. We're just going to stick with this right now.
And it probably also would have been would have been the 3DS title, it would have been launched by now. It saves a lot of rendering of and creation of new models by the hundreds.
Is it? I am just counting down the days of how much our lives right now are just going to be ruined by X and Y. I mean, not to say that Animal Crossing New Leaf is doing that to us already, but... Jeez, this is... I'm just excited finally getting back into the Pokemon franchise. I mean, the main Pokemon franchise games.
It's going to be pretty exciting. And I think this moves us nicely onto a 3DS title that I'm also personally very excited about, which is... We've had some recent news about the new Phoenix Wright title, which is called Phoenix Wright Dual Destinies. However, today, Capcom released a new trailer, which actually revealed what the age rating is for the game, which normally wouldn't be an issue with the Phoenix Wright series. It's always been T for teen in America and I believe a standard 12 rating over here in Europe. However, the most recent title is going to be rated M. Well, we're not entirely sure what reasons these are going to be yet, apart from the normal sort of thing which is stamped across the M sticker. But it could explain why this game is going to be eShop only, in addition to Capcom just hedging their bets on this series, which is having a kind of declining audience.
I actually find this one kind of interesting because I read on a blurb earlier today that the rated M might be for like murder in the actual game, so they had to give it a more adult rating because of that. I don't know if that was 100% confirmed or not, but that was a blurb that I read earlier today. But one thing that I found interesting is that a lot of people are upset on the rated M rating or the PEGI 16 rating for the game because it is a Phoenix Wright. They feel it should be for the younger crowd. But the reason I find that kind of funny is that we've heard a lot of news or people lately concerned that Nintendo doesn't have so many rated M for mature games out there, and they want to see more and more of the mature games. And then we get this game that normally wasn't, but now is rated M, and there's a little bit of an uproar on it. But I thought that was kind of interesting. But I'm actually pretty interested to see what is happening in this game specifically to give it the increased rating.
My guess, executions. Sorry, yeah, that I think that's the only way to do it. Phoenix Wright, like, you know, leads out these executions during, like, the people he is, like, defending against. So, that's the only thing I can get to it. But, no, I haven't been personally into the Phoenix Wright series. I've even known of it, whatever. I did play I was excited for the Phoenix Wright Professor Layton, you know, crossover. But, this one in particular, I know it has its audience as well, whatever, and it did draw me in, the fact that it was just a interactive, you know, lawyer simulator, or not simulator, but...
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a lawyer simulator.
Kind of, a lawyer, yeah, I know, that's a very bad choice of words on there for me on that one, but more of a law drama being played out by Capcom, so... Then that's the... With the touch of, obviously, the anime into the mix, and this one in the case, I never really... I mean, well, not never... I was drawn in by its art style, the way how everything was kind of played out, and especially for the character of Phoenix Wright. So, I mean, and I was able to play a little copy of this with a friend of mine, and I enjoyed it. I left it, like, a little bit here and there, but, I mean, I think after that I just never really got back to the series.
Okay. What you could actually do, you mentioned you downloaded the Pokemon app from the App Store. Capcom recently released the HD Trilogy for iOS, which is a free app with in-app purchases. And I believe you can play the first two cases of the first game for free, and the rest you can buy in chunks if you like what you play. So that sounds like that could be a good way to kind of test the waters again.
You got me excited when you said the Capcom HD Trilogy. I'm like, of what? But no. And then you just say Phoenix Wright. You know, way to give my hopes up. But no, I'll definitely check that out right there. I mean, all this free stuff that's coming out right now, and it's like, oh yeah, free. I'm like, oh, you got to buy the other cases. I'm like, God, iOS, you're just pulling the rug from underneath
me. I'm sure it's a lot cheaper than buying the free DS carts back in the day.
That is inherently true. So, oh boy.
Hey.
But yeah, Phoenix Wright rated M. I guess this is just one step closer to a teen rating for Professor Layton.
Well, you never know in what form he's going to return. There's talks that he may do, but the official stance is the game, which has recently come out in Japan and is coming out over here shortly. The sixth game will be Professor Layton's last appearance in a game, or at least his last game. But that doesn't excuse the spin-off series, which is on iOS apparently, which is called Layton Brothers.
Layton Brothers? Oh.
I checked it out. It's not really very Layton-y. It's, if anything...
like I said, Layton-y.
If anything, it's more on the topic of discussion, which is completely coincidental. It's more like Phoenix Wright, where you have a crime scene which you investigate. So you have it on your touchscreen, and you kind of poke around, and you look for clues, and you try and link things together. It doesn't really... I don't think it has the same charm as the actual Layton games. But it's, again, it's one of these free to download, and if you play it and like it, you can pay to unlock the full chunk of the game. So if you're really into Professor Layton, I would recommend downloading it and giving it a go if you have a device which you can play it on.
The Layton series is something I really wanted to get back into, and that with Phoenix Wright, this is a while for me to actually jump a little bit more into it.
Okay, next on our list, we have some Smash Bros. News. And it wasn't just another, although admittedly funny, a pointless picture taken from Mr. Sakurai playing with his characters. We actually had news of a new character, or a returning character, which is Captain Olimar and his Pikmin. So was anyone actually not expecting him to arrive for the brawl?
Before the game was revealed, Sakurai had mentioned that he was not prone to, like, the only way to make a game better like this is to add just more and more characters, or, you know, like, more and more, like, you know, playing fields to bat, like, to fight on. And this one, I really wasn't kind of surprised. I mean, Olimar was a fairly well-received, I thought it was a very well-received character in Super Smash Bros. Brawl. And I have no problem with his return in this one, but my one thing I take from this is I hope Sakurai and the whole website does not get in the habit of, you know, what they did with, you know, the Smash Brothers Dojo from when Brawl was released. They got into the habit almost revealing a new character almost each month until the game's, like, you know, arrival. And it got to the point where I believe almost every single character, with the exception of one, which I believe was Rob the Robot, and they, like, kind of just spoiled the fun of it. I mean, I remember when it was, like, within Melee, the only idea of, like, well, the thought of, like, what characters were going to be hidden in there was all through rumors, I believe, from, several internet forums when I was, like, visiting as a kid. And just to finally, you know, figure out, oh, I had to play the game for 20 hours, well, not really, for it to get Mewtwo in Melee, I found that, like, you know, a great moment for me just to play as that character, and I'm just, basically, I welcome Olimar, but I just hope this doesn't turn to the fact that, like, we're getting spoiled, like, you know, oh, here's every single character that we have. I mean, I feel like, you know, release the curtain a little bit, but don't show us everything.
I don't think that they're going to show us all of the characters. I think there will definitely be some surprises in there when we first play it. But it was said that, and I think it was during E3, that he had hoped to show us something new every week, including characters. Now, obviously, we're not getting a character every single week. But I have a feeling that we will almost like you said, almost once a month, I think we will see somebody new. Maybe a little bit less and less as we get closer to the actual launch of the game. But, you know, as far as Olimar goes, I wasn't too surprised. Actually, I thought with his very minimalized appearance in Pikmin 3, I think he's only in there for like a few short scenes. I think it's actually perfect to bring him into Super Smash Brothers for the Wii U, just because it brings Pikmin in, but it doesn't take away from the game itself. So I'm actually pretty excited to see how he's going to fit into the new one.
I like this return of this character right now, and judging from the few screens I saw in there, I mean, a friend of mine had tweeted to me saying like he doesn't look as detailed as like all these other newer returning like Nintendo characters in Smash. And I had mentioned to him, like, well, did you see that he actually has a whistle on here as opposed to, you know, not what he had in Brawl? I mean, I think with a character like him, it's very hard to kind of get nice little, like, details and sprites on him when he's just kind of a very, in the face exactly, a simple-looking character.
I think Sakurai's actually found a nice balanced art style for this Smash Bros. I was a bit worried at first he was going to get really carried away and almost go for a realistic approach to Smash. Because how Melee and Brawl kind of really picked up to detail, even on small things like the details in Mario's jeans, I was quite worried that this HD Smash Bros. Was going to make all the characters kind of look unlike they do in their own games, because they don't take this detailed approach. But it seems they've actually drawn and pulled back some of these details and just kind of refined the characters.
You know, and I don't think that does go too far. I'd welcome that, but it's... Yeah, I mean, there's so much you can do as far as, like, you know, the threads on Mario's jeans or how perforated metal... there's the bits of perforated metal, like, on Samus's suit, which, you know, is I welcome as well, but it's... How realistic can you get with that?
My biggest concerns with characters like Link. He could have been destroyed, because that character could live in a realistic look, as it were. He could be a human, as it were, with the pointy ears, with the same sword and suit, really detailed. But we wouldn't be Link.
I think this is kind of go with the problem that happened with PlayStation All-Stars Royal Battle Royale, is that it took all these characters from all these Sony properties, threw them all in there, and, you know, say as you will if it's a Smash Brothers ripoff or not, but, I mean, it's fun while it lasts a little bit, whatever. I just felt like its replay value was not up there with the Smash Brothers series had. But you're taking all these characters, throwing them like from the Sony's franchises, and yet, for as different and unique they are, you have a lot of different human characters, especially in this one, like more than usual. They feel a little bit out of place as far as this one. Whereas when you take all these Nintendo characters, you feel like, and you look at them in the Smash Brothers series, you're like, yeah, I definitely can see that, them being shared in the same universe. It felt like that they had to detain whatever from basically their own art styles in the Battle Royale, whereas in Smash Brothers it seems like they take an over-encompassing like art style to the characters in Smash Brothers to match everything, so it makes it feel like, you know, they're all part of this different world. Like, they come from different games, but they're all part of the same world.
Right, and I think that's where Smash Brothers is getting it right here in HD. I mean, like Lewis said, I mean, all the characters so far look really great, but they all fit, and nobody yet so far seems out of place, which is a really great thing. I mean, even the girl from Wii Fit, I mean, she looks perfect in the game. I mean, you would think that she would be the most out of place, but bringing her up to HD graphics compared to what she was in the Wii itself. It makes her look new and fresh, but again, she's still her, and she's still where she needs to be. So I'm really liking what I'm seeing so far.
As am I, and it makes the wait even harder, so.
Okay, I think this is our final piece of Nintendo news before we jump into our main feature. Nintendo released in America four new Street Pass Plaza games. So these are the first additional games that Nintendo's rolled out for the Street Pass Plaza, alongside a big update it received. Has anyone actually been able to check these out yet?
I have not got the download for my 3DS yet, but a few of the people I played with, whatever, is that they're they really do enjoy them, whatever. I mean, I was just kind of surprised that this update came on a little bit, but there was like four different titles, I believe, whatever, released for the Street Pass games.
Oh, yeah, us in Europe, we got quite lucky, actually. We actually got this update a couple weeks before yourselves, which doesn't happen so often, but it seems to be happening more frequently. So the actual four games, in their American names at least, because they do change, we have Mii Force, which is essentially a retro-styled 2D shooter. You have a game called Flower Town, which out of the bunch of them seems to be the worst, but it might be it has some complexities under the surface, as it were, which I haven't picked up on. In Flower Town, what you seem to do, you pick out a flower which you'll get a seed from, which you'll plant in the pot, and then the Mii's that come will help water it and grow it, and then you put it on your collection and you seem to repeat this process. I'm not sure what else that game involves yet. The next game, Wario's Way.
I thought you said Wario's Way, and I got like really happy there for a little bit. I was like,
but that would be an interesting concept, introducing Nintendo characters. But before we get too distracted, Wario's Way is a game where the Mii's who visit you bring along an army, or a bunch of soldiers to join your army, and your goal of the game is to take over the world with your gigantic army. It's fairly simplistic, but it kind of does the job as a Street Pass Plaza game. That one's pretty fun. And finally, there's a game called Monsters Manor, where it's deceptively kind of a block puzzle game, although it looks more like an adventure game. You basically kind of make a path around this room blocked in shadow, and you're trying to find the staircase to the next floor, but you occasionally bump into monsters and you're doing an RPG-type turn-based battle, and that one's pretty fun too. Overall, the package is pretty good, and the games cost $4.99 each, or you can buy a bundle of all four for $14.99. Either way, I would recommend three of the four games, so you can either buy the bundle and get Flower Town and not play it, or try and see if there is more depth in it, or just buy them separately and see if it will cost you the same.
So just steer clear of Flower Town altogether, you're saying?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to say, but I'm looking at this bundle price and thinking you might as well get it just in case you do like it, because it's not going to cost you anything more if you do just want to get these games up front.
Yeah,
Now I have to Street Pass with more people right now, because like the only one I have is some random that I got from the mall, Iwata, and yeah, that's it right now. Because these games can only be played with the Mii's that you've Street Passed with, not your friends that you have on your friends list.
That's correct. Yeah, so the same as the two games on the Plaza currently. So was it Find Me and, Puzzle Swap or Tile Swap?
Yeah, Eugene, to bring up the name that we haven't seen or heard in a while, but Eugene, when he went when he was visiting like Seattle about a couple months ago, he had tweeted me and like back and forth saying that when he had Street Pass mode on with his 3DS, that afterwards he got like 27 or 35 Street Passes just in one day. But most of that can be like attributed to the fact that he was near Redmond, Washington, home of all things Nintendo and Microsoft. But that's the thing, I just need to get on there. It seems like, since I'm not in college anymore right now, I feel like, especially a small town like me, I live in right now, it's just like, I don't feel like there's going to be that many kids or people playing 3DS around. I mean, I have an XL, I'm not going to be putting that in my pocket, in my summer shorts, especially right now. But, as enticing as these are, I just really need to get more friends on my Street Pass to actually like get into this.
The thing, I think these games are only really worth playing if you've at least completed the first two Find Me games. Although, as a kind of incentive, there are exclusive hats you can only get from like tickets or trophies that you unlock within these four games. And I think it will let you see the silhouettes of them, even if you haven't bought the games. So I think that's an interesting mechanic that Nintendo's using. Because I picked up Captain Falcon's helmet the other day. I can imagine if I hadn't bought the games, I'd be tempted to buy one for the chance to try and win it.
So, you know, it's really capturing on Valve's idea of, like, you know, using hats as rewards right now. I mean, you've got that in Animal Crossing New Leaf, and now this.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they don't let you, you know, use these sort of hats and customization outside of the plaza. It's all locked down in there. I mean, the 3DS doesn't really use many games, if at all, which use Miis. But if you could transfer them to the Wii U and say I could play Nintendo Land or something with my Mii wearing a Captain Falcon hat, that would be pretty cool.
You know, once and when we get the Miiverse on the 3DS, maybe that'll be something that will carry over at the time, and maybe that's what they're preparing for. But I really actually like the new layout of the Miiverse on the 3DS. The more open look environment, you can kind of scroll back and forth. I haven't purchased any of the four games yet, but I have kind of checked them out, and just by looking at the description, talking to the rabbit to get the description and stuff, and I'm pretty interested in them. I think that when I make the move, I'll probably just buy the package. I mean, that it just makes more sense to me rather than buying them individually. But I got the update on accident. I opened up my 3DS and it was there ready for me. So I was actually pretty excited about that. Overall, you know, going off of what you know, Harrison was saying about the find Miis and so on, I actually you know, I've been taking mine out quite a bit this summer, and I haven't picked up a lot. I think I've got a total of 11 people now, including like Iwata and so on. But I found people just in random places, you know, walking down the street. I'll have it in my pocket and I'll get home and there's one request and so on. It will be interesting to see, though. I'm going to the Vans Warped Tour this Saturday in Tinley Park in Chicago, and I'm going to take my 3DS with me. So it will be interesting to see how many people I find in such a crowded place like that, if any.
Yeah, definitely. You have to keep us up there.
Kids, like, young teenagers mosh in a mosh pit with their 3DSs. I'm sure that's not going to actually bode too well. But
yeah, I'll be looking for random games flying through the air, though. So we'll see if I find any of those.
It's like, oh, look, Shin Megami Tensei 4. Thank you. Oh, Fire Emblem. Oh, what's this? It's a broken in half 3DS XL. Let me find the other half and see what I can do.
Save it for parts.
Before we move on to our main feature, I do want to make a correction. I did make the statement that it would be cool to play Nintendo Land with a Captain Falcon helmet, which is, of course, something the game supports in the game, whatever the F-Zero game is in that, because whatever game you play, your Mii dresses up in the appropriate franchise's get-up anyway. So that was a very bad point to make.
Bad and how?
Oh, as I said, it would be good to use my Captain Falcon helmet I got from my 3DS with a game which used Miis, and I use Nintendo Land as an example. But in Nintendo Land, your Mii dresses up in Nintendo franchises anyway, and one of them is F-Zero.
That's true.
I figured it was bad. The fact that, you know, it's like, oh, I don't have a Captain Falcon helmet in real life right now, because, I mean, who else would not want one of those right now? I mean, if I had a motorcycle, I'd probably be wearing that every damn day.
However, whenever they do get around to making the inevitable Wii Sports U, it would be good if you could transfer this stuff over.
Right.
So you could be playing tennis or golf while wearing some wacky Nintendo hat or costume or whatever it is.
Yeah, you know, something similar, you know, on Xbox Live, you know, you can buy your outfits and accessorize your character. And there's some games like Doritos Crash Course, which is like an Xbox 360 staple now. And you actually wear whatever outfit your character is wearing while playing that course. And, you know, that would be pretty awesome to dress up as your favorite, you know, Nintendo character while playing a similar type game like Wii Sports, or even walking around in the main area of Nintendo Land before going into an actual specific game. That would be pretty cool to, you know, just accessorize your character within there also.
Harrison, did you want to talk about a particular controversy?
Yes. One thing, before we get into the bigger feature, our last feature, we wanted to discuss a little bit of controversy that, you know, Nintendo of America kind of got itself into around the middle of last week, which was this past weekend was the 2013 Evo Fighting Game Tournament. and one of the games that were to be made into, like, well, to be used for both a for the tournament and a live streaming service as well, was Super Smash Bros. Melee. Well, while taking a nap, I woke up, but everyone knows, basically, a couple trending topics were Evo and Melee, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, the tournament must have started. And until I had heard that Nintendo had banned the game from being streamed live on the Evo tournament. Not being taken out entirely, but being from being streamed. This, of course, led up to a very large amount of backlash online and, you know, through various critics and various forms of, like, different video game medias, forms of media out there. And it wasn't until about, I believe, about 2 hours later that the a few members who were attached to the Evo game, like, tournament had, you know, reaffirmed confirmation that, well, not reaffirmed confirmation, but got new confirmation that Nintendo was going to be allowing, well, like, Melee to be live-streamed. The reason I say, like, bring this up right now is that, you know, you have with the issue with, like, Nintendo doing, well, with Xbox doing a complete 180 with both used game policy, it's always online, and, of course, you know, digital rights management, and in record time, Nintendo does this little backlash, like, this little turnaround, whatever, for, you know, one of the more classic, like, you know, GameCube titles in, like, of the past, two generations ago. And the reason this kind of hit home for me, well, not hit home, really bad for me, was the fact, yeah, the game is still being playable, was still going to be playable there if it wasn't live-streamed, but it's the fact that how that game got chosen was what really kind of brought a smile on my face, but it being taken off was kind of just slightly irked me, was it earned, like, that game earned around close to about, like, you know, people donated around over close to $100,000 in donations to, I believe, like, I can't think of the name, like, but to breast cancer research. Great cause. You know, great cause for that, whatever. Congratulations on you gamers for doing that, whatever, for, you know, for doing something that, you know, affects, you know, my extended family as well. And, obviously, you know, sites like Kotaku could probably just say, like, Nintendo hates Tatas or something like that. I don't know. I feel like Kotaku would make some sensational headline like that. But the grand scheme of things right now, what do you think of this complete, you know, turnaround by Nintendo? I mean, did they? Did, I mean, obviously, from them doing the right thing, but was the backlash kind of just, I don't know, overblown?
I almost feel that it was a little overblown. I mean, the whole situation was kind of done and over with in almost no time. I know that myself. I kind of follow Isaiah Triforce Johnson on Facebook, and I saw where he had posted that, you know, it wasn't going to be allowed. He called his contacts within Nintendo, and it wasn't more than, you know, maybe a couple hours later that I saw a post from him saying that, you know, everything's good, we're able to use it. Obviously, he was upset because he's pretty big in the competitive gaming industry, but I think that the problem here, and again, I don't know a lot of the details, but I'm guessing that the problem here was that even though that they raised the money for a very good cause and you know, it's a highly wanted game to be played there, I'm guessing that whoever was in charge or whichever group was in charge did not probably go through the right means and routes to get final approval from Nintendo. And, you know, I can kind of side on Nintendo with that if that's the case. You know, Nintendo has to follow a certain set of rules in situations like this. If they let one sneak by, they're going to have to let everybody kind of sneak by with it. You know, it could even go back as far as, you know, the Let's Play videos and you know, their involvement in that and the monetizing and so on. You know, somebody could just say, well, I'm monetizing this to donate to a certain fund or because you let them do it, why don't you let me do it? So I think that it's kind of a broader spectrum thing. And if they probably would have just followed a basic route to get it done ahead of time, there wouldn't have been an issue overall. But either way, I mean, in the end, Nintendo did the right thing and they let it happen. So I'm not too surprised about the whole issue. But I'm actually more surprised that it was, you know, resolved so quickly. That's probably the biggest thing that shocks me.
The power of the internet.
Exactly.
And, you know, I'm glad they went that way. I mean, obviously, I was kind of torn in the middle, whatever, the fact that I just said, you know, to everybody who was just throwing an uproar about it, I was like, you know, the game's still going to be played there. It just, you know, not being streamed, but their reasoning I thought was stupid. But well, the initial reasoning I thought were like, well, not initial, the supposed reasoning, I'm guessing, from, you know, those who were very, like, on that last thread of trust with Nintendo. And in the case of that, I could see your point, whatever, Scott, the fact, like, that they, you know, yeah, some of these companies, they need to get final approval and stuff like that. I mean, they do want that game to be shown there. It's just, hey, we need you to show this, whatever, with our permission.
Okay, and with the actual controversy kind of buried at this point, who actually watched the stream?
I did not get a chance to. I was working during the time the stream was going on, but I did follow little bits and parts on there from Twitter. And the only complaints I saw on there was that, yeah, I mean, we like seeing all these different matches, whatever, but obviously just having to see Final Destination, I think, was the level that they used, and hearing that music over and over and over and over again, it just... But, you know, I think Final Destination is the go-to area for, you know, competitions like that.
Now, this was the first time I actually watched EVO in any shape or form, because fighting games aren't usually my interest, but I don't necessarily consider Smash Bros. To be in that same category, and I am a big fan of Smash Bros. And I was really intrigued to see what these really top-tier players, how a match would look like against them. And a lot of the things you would expect were true. They were using these very plain stages. So basically, Final Destination was one of the options. The only other options were stages where you had a flat bottom and the three platforms at the top in that kind of triangular formation. And although some of the fights were quite straight, as if you had like Star Fox versus another gun wielding character, but I found some fights where they had characters like Peach versus Jigglypuff, which was great to see, and there was a great player who controlled Ice Climbers. And it was really cool to see these characters I'd not necessarily considered before being used in a very proficient way. And all the various different tactics involved. And one of them for the Ice Climbers, it even raised the question in my head whether this was intentional by Sakurai, or was this just some sort of, not quite bug, but just this kind of playing the game, as it were, or gaming it, where one of the Ice Climbers could grab the opponent and the other one would... then do the same, and they would then do the succession of hammer smashes, and it would seem it would be absolutely inescapable. So as soon as they get this thing running, the person would just be stuck there getting pummeled until they hit over 100 or so percent, and they would just fly off the screen. And you know, as soon as this guy got this lock, that was it for that guy. He would be off in about 10 seconds. But it's great to see a game like Smash Bros. Being used in this competitive environment with such a broad range of characters.
Oh, yeah. And it's been going on for awfully quite some time right now. I think even in Twin Galaxies' own little tournaments that they do as well. But, I mean, back to the characters on there, you see on there, I mean, I always like the ones that people play as Ness, because, you know, there's a character who has a little... When I played the game, you know, when I was younger, I never really understood his moveset. And even the videos I see of people playing as him, and if they wreck really hard in some of these games, I mean, it is a sight to be behold.
It would be interesting to see when Smash Bros. For the Wii U comes out, if it will be accepted by this kind of this high-level fighting community, or if they will stick to still playing Melee.
I am sure they are. I mean, there have been changes they did with Brawl. I know that Meta Knight is now banned, I believe, has been... for a while been banned as a character to be used in tournament, like Brawl tournaments. And whereas Brawl kind of felt like more of a casual kind of like a way of playing Smash Brothers, and Melee was the more hardcore aspect of it. And, you know, and I think Sakurai's just wanting to go more of the balance between, like, wants to go the balance between with Smash Brothers Wii U and 3DS.
Yeah, I think...
Which I'd like.
Yeah, I think on the most simplistic level, the main difference between Melee and Brawl, in terms of how they play, is Melee is a lot faster than Brawl is. I mean, it may not seem if you just go from one game to the next and you never play Melee again, but if you watch them two side by side, it looks like Melee's on fast forward. And I think that's what attracts the competitive gamers to that, instead of going to the newer game. And apparently the Wii U edition is going to be doing a balancing act between the two.
Well, luckily Nintendo kind of dodged a bullet with this one. I mean, the last thing they need is more bad press, especially with the what they had earlier this year with the Let's Plays. But apparently, from a few rumblings I've been hearing from a couple like articles, is that it's maybe they might be lessening their grip on that little of it after so much fan reaction. But you know, I believe we're celebrating a birthday this week, aren't we?
We most certainly are. We are celebrating a 30th birthday. 30 years of the original Famicom in Japan.
Oh, I was expecting it was Scott.
That was last week.
See, I'm not sure if the name Family Computer would have stuck as well in America and Europe. But Famicom is absolutely iconic, and we all know the legacy it has and its vast array of absolutely amazing games. I mean, the Famicom is kind of held up to even like restoring the game console, just the whole entire game console platform, giving it a rebirth, as it were. But what we're going to talk about today is some of our favourites, or just some of the most memorable, what we would call NES games. Who would like to start off and chuck something into our mix of games here?
I believe the person who actually has at least outlived the Famicom.
Yeah. Get the old guy on here. You know, I was actually 6 years old when it came out, so I think I have outlived it. But you know, I think that there's actually just so many great games to even, you know, announce or name off here. But you know, there are definitely a couple that really, really stand out for me. And you know, one of them would be, for example, Dragon Warrior or Dragon Quest, as you probably would call it overseas. But it was one of the first role-playing games I had ever played. I had no idea what I was doing in it, and it you know, introduced me to the genre really, and got me really made that my favorite genre of games right now. And you know, it's something that I went back and replayed it not too long ago, within the last year, and it actually you know, it definitely probably it doesn't really hold up today like Final Fantasy 1 would, but it's still a really, really great game. But then we also saw some other odder games that really weren't on the same level. There were games like Shadowgate, which was more of a point and click type journey. And I can remember that when I played that, I played for hours and didn't get past the first door because I didn't know how to get through. But once I found out you had to click the skull above the door to get the key, you know, I was set, and I was hooked on the game until it was done. And then some other of the odd games like Clash at Demonhead, you know, which I know I don't know if you had a chance to play it yet, Harrison, but it's still one of my most favorite Nintendo games of all time out there, just because it was so different than what I had played before. It was more anime, and it was just a great game overall.
It's on my to do slash download on my torrent list right now. I mean, next to next to my entire, like, you know, Beach Boys discography that I got to download right now. Not that was me being snarky right now. That's actually a thing. So, yeah, I really need to get back on that right now. But, no, I mean, what you mentioned as far as, like, you know, games like Shadowgate, where you at, or what was the one you mentioned? You had to hit the skull with the key. I mean, it's moments like that in NES titles that you just, you loved them and then you hated them at the same time, whatever. I mean, those aha moments. But again, it's like those games are just sitting there staring like, it's right here, keep looking.
It's so simple, yet it's so hard at the same time. And especially back then, I mean, I can remember sitting on the living room floor with, you know, me and my brother, and my parents were in the same room, and they were complaining that, you know, you're just standing there, you know, do something or shut it off. And so finally, I just started clicking everywhere, and there it was. And it just didn't stop from there. I think that game, I actually ended up staying up until like 2-3 o'clock in the morning just to finish it. It was, you know, something I just wouldn't stop playing.
Okay, when I was researching for this feature coming up, I was looking through the games, and I was scrolling through all the obvious ones, and then a name popped up, which is a game I haven't thought of in a while, but I did enjoy immensely back in the day, which is River City Ransom. Now, it's a game which, looking back on it, seems like it was
urban,
very, very far ahead of its time.
You mean Urban Champions, basically, you know, a better and well-more known brother.
No. I'm not sure we should be quite closely relating it to Urban Champ.
Okay, I know I'm going off the side with this one, but okay. With out of all the NES titles that you decide to do for a 3D classic, Urban Champion gets one. Why?
That is a very good point. Probably because it was so simple to put together in that 3D remake.
Yeah, it's simple, yeah. It's just like, beat to the other end. Well, we need a quick buck.
Okay, so, yeah, River City Ransom seemed to be ahead of its time because it seems to be this kind of marriage of kind of a beat-em-up style scrolling game as well as RPG elements. It's a formula that recently the Scott Pilgrim game tied to the movie borrowed. So you can go into shops and you can buy items and they can help you. They can help you and you can also learn extra additional moves. And you do all this just by the A and B button on your NES controller. And it also has this surprisingly a good level of detail for 8-bit characters with the Kino Kune boys style, which was repeated in a couple of other games in a continuation of that series, which also ran on sport titles. But basically these really kind of chunky blocky sprites. You can see like the facial expressions of the characters, which you didn't often see in games of this generation. So I just wanted to put River City Ransom out as a game I have fond memories of.
I mean, when you discussed this, whatever, you had quite a list on there, and Scott and I, we had joked, we're like, no, we already did a top 25 Nintendo game list, well, all Nintendo platform list right now. I mean, we're not trying to list this, but, I mean, we kid on there. But, I mean, just River City Ransom? I mean, is that just the one that you have those vivid memories, or is it just anything else in particular?
Oh, no, it's not the only one, but I wanted to give everyone a fair shout to jump in.
I mean, if I had to say the ones that I have for my fondest NES memories or games is, aside from the games, I mean, one thing I just still, that held me well to that console was, you know, the peripherals and the accessories, you know, the Zapper, the Advantage, even Rob the Robot, whatever. I never did own one, but, you know, it's just, I mean, all these little quirky and, like, unique
the
little...
Power glove.
The what?
The power...
What is it?
Wait, or actually, no, wait. That's... I might be blasphemy here, but isn't Power Glove SNES?
Yes, I completely forgot about that. The Power Glove, yeah, for NES.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, it was NES.
Yes, yes. It's so bad. It's so bad. So I'll just leave it back. But no, it's those things that, you know, all these little collectibles that I had as a kid, whatever, to get these, like, you know, like, to play my NES as much as I did with my older brother. And, you know... That along the games that I had on there. I mean, obviously, the first original Mario Brothers was the first game I played. And that's a train in the background, by the way. Yeah, you can probably hear that. But the first game I played, you know, was obviously Super Mario Brothers. I mean, even that first few levels, it's stuff I can play in my sleep. Yeah, it seems cliche to say that's my first game I ever played, but I believe that's one that kind of pushed me through the door as far as, like, games to play a little bit. I mean, and... You know, that led me to rent more games, you know, games that my brother and I would try to beat each weekend. You know, be it Legend of Zelda, Ninja Gaiden, Metal Gear, Metroid, Punch-Out, DuckTales. And it looks like I'm listing off basically what Lewis said in his list right now, but he's basically listing everything I played and rented. But not only that, I mean, Final Fantasy titles. I mean, all these are stuff that, you know... I always got excited to go to the video store to actually, you know, rent a game like this, you know, from a mom-and-pop store that we had in our hometown. And just to plop down a few dollars and rent about 3 games or so. And, you know, I'd have my time playing this game, my brother would have this, and we'd go together playing a 2-player game like this. I mean, those are memories that I've always that are hold near dear to my heart.
Okay, it's not a title actually played... Back in the day, it's one I picked up recently with its 3D version, which is Kid Icarus. Have either of you played?
Oh yeah,
the NES version or the classic Kid Icarus.
I played, but never did beat it. Never did.
It is a very odd mix of was it Zelda or Metroid and
Mario, it is,
basically.
And it's very, very hard.
I believe it was done by Gunpei. Yeah, and I think Gunpei Yokai actually helped produce that, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't think you are. It's odd going back to that game as well after playing the 3DS version, because the characters on the 3DS game are all just kind of 3D models of the very basic sprites in this original game, and there are so wacky enemies. It's a really, really bizarre game, and it's odd how they have the currency system on the hearts. And the game is extremely difficult, but it is also oddly addictive.
It is, and I think that's something that, you know, especially back in the day, that I found with a lot of the games. There were a lot of games out there that were difficult, but you just kept at it. And, you know, I've seen things like the Angry Video Game Nerd. He's, played Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde or Silver Surfer or Back to the Future, which were all three very, very difficult games. But, you know, back then, you know, it wasn't like today where you could just download a new game or, you know, have a big collection of games at your disposal. You know, your options were to, you know, beg your parents to go buy you a new game if you didn't have a job of your own, or go to rent a game. And even back then, when you rented a game, at least in this area, you could only rent so many games at a time, and they gave you like a 3 to 4 game limit at the most. And so you played them regardless of the level of difficulty. And during that time, you know, these games that were so tough, you actually got pretty decent at them because you played them an entire weekend or entire week, depending on how long you rented the game for. And you didn't have, you know, necessarily a lot of the cheats or the mods or anything that you might have now for some games out there. I mean, you basically had what you had. And if there were any cheats for the game, you know, you had to basically have a Nintendo Power to even know what those cheats were. I mean, there was just no other way. I mean, unless you had a friend who happened to have a Nintendo Power that told it to you. So that's what I loved about the older generation of games. I mean, you played them for what they were. Some of them were very bad games. Some of them were very good games. Some of them were kind of in the middle. But either way, they kind of got addicting. And I can't remember really too many games that I played and gave up on, you know, over a weekend and didn't try to beat till the very end.
Battletoads.
You know, actually, I can remember Battletoads itself. I mean, me and one of my friends, we played it at the video store in their arcades room, and you know, we actually beat it on the arcade. And gosh, we used so many quarters that he took from this jug in his mom's house. So you know, we didn't actually pay for it; his mom did. But then we played it again on the NES, and really it was definitely a lot cheaper, and you know, we spent a whole weekend, and you know, him and I together, we ended up beating it. I mean, again, there were some very hard levels, but we just toughed through it. I mean, it was what it was, and you accepted that back then.
And that was kind of like the last bit. Like, I think, well, yeah, that generation of games was kind of like the end of like the wild west days of gaming. You know, where you'd get these. I mean, we have shovelware today. I don't even think the word shovelware kind of, like, the amount that each of those consoles, be it Master System or in NES or even not TurboGrafx, but of that day and age, kind of just produced. It was just rarely, I mean, you could get away with any type of game you could think of.
Well, and part of that was the console wars between Sega and Nintendo. You know, they were constantly trying to put something else new to attract you to their system. I think Sega actually had a lot more shovelware than Nintendo had. You know, between the two of them, Nintendo's tend to be a little bit better high quality than the Sega games. Sega released a lot of really, really bad games, but they chose the quality over the quantity route, and you know, both released a ton of games during the short amount of time. Sega did quite a few more, but again, it was something that we just accepted it, and it was good too, because we did rent a lot of games, you know, 3-4 at a time over a weekend, and do all we could to beat them. You know, there were some games like Final Fantasy, for example, that, you know, would take us, you know, 2-3 weekends to beat. And when you had a game like Final Fantasy and you rented it, you know, you played it and you hoped that nobody rented it in between the time you rented it. And you hope that your save game was still there. And there were a few times that we did that, and you know, we rented 2-3 weekends in a row. The save game was there. You rented the fourth weekend, and all your progress was gone because somebody else rented it and deleted it. So you know, that it's just something you kind of had to take back then. But definitely, you know, so many great games back then. I mean, just adding to the list. I mean, we have Star Tropics, which was a great game. Super Mario Brothers 3. You know, I would even add Battle of Olympus, which is a kind of a Zelda 2 knockoff. But it is really a great game.
And, you know, there's all those memories that we have of the NES. I mean, obviously for a lot of us out here around, you know, born up to like, the early or mid-80s, or even late 80s, is that, that was our first console that we had. I mean, that's always going to be something that, you know, that's going to be a vital part of, like, what became us as gamers right now. And, obviously, this is kind of, you know, we're celebrating the first official release of the console, you know, from in the land of the Rising Sun. And it still has that effect on, you know, how much of a game like that, a console like that, we go back to keep playing to. I mean, aside from a Super Nintendo, these are two consoles that I will go back to probably and play again and just find just a replay, you know, even if I'm missing a power cord or not. I'll try my best to order one off eBay or something like that just so I can continue. I mean, yeah, I mean, some would say I'm wasting money and just get a torrent of it right now, but it's like, I want the look and feel of that. But, you know, it's nice to see something like this turn 30 years old and just kind of make us all feel like, has it really been that long?
And the other thing Nintendo needs to continue to do to preserve these great games is to continue to support the Wii U Virtual Console. And hopefully we'll see more of a transition from the decent catalogue they did build up on the Virtual Console on the Wii and move that over to the Wii U. Whether these are by smaller chunks, but I think they need to kind of step up what they're currently doing in putting out releases. So
that is one people. Yeah, that is one thing they do need to improve on is the Virtual Console. I mean, obviously it's nice to see it back, you know, in full form right now. But it just when it comes to steady stream of releases, that's I mean, yeah, it's steady stream of releases that they really need to get onto.
Yeah, and especially when they're struggling to put out disc releases, they can at least. I can't see where the complications are going, at least for the titles they own exclusive licenses to, their own IPs, why they can't push these out to the Virtual Console, why not put out, I mean, they're currently doing a couple a week, why not do, you know, 20 a week, 30 a week, you know, why not? I mean, they could definitely make a lot of money selling these games on the Wii U, and they could run TV campaigns and print campaigns showing off all the great retro Nintendo games you can play on the Wii U on both the TV and on the Wii U gamepad.
And, you know, and the success and legacy of that console lives on through those type of services.
And it would be interesting if in 30 years' time, celebrating the Wii U own anniversary, whether there will be some sort of service in place to emulate that quirky system on whatever quirky system Nintendo is running.
Maybe Scott's Oh Yeah or something
yeah,
like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, there's so many levels of complications Nintendo adding with their different multiple screens and different types of weird controllers, and I'm sure we haven't seen the last of Nintendo's unique approaches to game design and console hardware design. Yeah, in a roundabout way, this does wrap up another episode of Nintendo Radio. If you've enjoyed the show, please jump onto iTunes and give us a review. It really helps new listeners find the show, and it helps us promote the show itself. If you've got any questions or topics you'd like us to discuss, feel free to send those into tips@nintendo.com.